Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with all of you today. From the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to be joined later today by our high school football announcers. We'll be calling the games on the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation family of stations tomorrow night. I know Kevin has a titanic showdown with the 2-4 number 3 seed Chicolemi Braves.
That's right. The team that has a similar record and sitting just behind them in the playoff scenario, Shamokin Indians.
I feel like I'm watching the Pete Carroll Seattle Seahawks, who are 7-9. All right. So
they won't get a home game. I can guarantee you that.
They don't deserve one.
There's no way they get a home game, anyone, other than the first team.
My goodness. All right, so that is coming up tomorrow night, and we'll get the complete rundown as to what Kevin fears about this game, along with Dave Ritchie's take as well. We're looking forward to that. Sealands Grove is undefeated and playing some great football.
Yeah, they have a big matchup with Montoursville.
And that'll be tomorrow night on Eagle 107. And Pat O'Brien will have that call for us as well. So we're looking forward to that. And Penn State, Ohio State. So we'll have our high school football announcers on next half hour. And Ross Insana, which is perfect because of the insanity that was yesterday in baseball. Wow.
Can I say that I knew from the very beginning what the correct call was? I honestly
did. You can say it. No, you can say it, but there isn't a single person out there that believes you.
You know
why?
Here's why you should believe that. Because that's the sort of thing happens. I know you are.
I'm just kidding.
I know you are. But my wife even said, how do you know that? I said, because that's the sort of thing that happens in a Little League game. So that's how, if you ask anybody that's ever umpired Little League Baseball, they're well aware that when that ball comes back, if there is not intent to interfere, that's a live ball. Because I'll tell you what, you don't know how many times the ball goes back to the pitcher, flies over the pitcher's head, or doesn't even go anywhere near the pitcher, and the runner moves. It happens a lot in Little League Baseball.
I'll bet it does.
I knew the moment it happened what the call was.
Here's the Kevin Herr rundown. Rangers, Blue Jays recap, throwback, delayed, and that delayed everything. Okay, we'll talk about that more as we go
just
here.
It baffles me it took him that long to figure it out. I'm sitting there going, ball.
But it doesn't happen in their game.
You're absolutely right. And that's exactly what I said to my wife when we were talking about it. I said, it doesn't always happen in a major league. Matter of fact, I can't even tell you the last time I've even heard of it happening in a major league game. But it is a routine occurrence in Little League.
Yes. Oh, it is. No, I know it is. And what did I think? Of course, I expected this from you. What did I think of the bat flip? WK, baby, WK.
That's what I thought, too. I really didn't. It didn't bother me. I don't care.
I mean, it's just not. You know, you watch the post-game interview with him. You could see, really tell he didn't really know he did it.
What was it?
Wrapped up in the emotion of the moment, and you have to understand the emotion of the moment. And he did, and the pitcher's emotion is the guy just drilled one to, obviously, Nova Scotia. So
I was headed for the Hudson Bay.
But, yeah, kind of played out in terms of like how it played out, I said that when Hamels left, he'd have the lead. When the bullpen came in, they'd lose.
You called it. I mean, it was almost like you saw it before it happened.
It's just, but that's, you have to look at that with certain teams. I mean, for example, the Dodgers are very much in that same danger area tonight. They have one of the top five starting pitchers in all of baseball that they're handing the ball to tonight. But he is not a complete game pitcher. The Dodgers, I think, will have the lead tonight when he leaves. And then after that, everybody in Dodger Stadium is going to find religion pitch by pitch because their bullpen is not very good.
My question
not
is,
very good.
My question is, that is the Ravine, right?
Yeah, it's
okay.
The Dodgers.
I was pretty sure, but I thought I better ask. But my question is, how long will it take people to get there, and will they stay past the seventh inning?
Again, I don't care.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, if you're a Dodgers fan, and I know we have a couple of them listening, Dave, and but if you're a Dodgers fan, that's got to frustrate you to see that team not have fans after the seventh inning because they just go to the event to be seen and then leave. And it happened during the playoffs. I mean, a few years ago when the Phillies were playing them, you could see in the seventh inning, people were starting to leave their seats. It's like, this is a playoff game. I know that thing doesn't bug you, but I just...
They leave.
I mean, I understand the get there late thing because of traffic, all right? That I understand completely.
Sure. And by the way, Dodger Stadium does have great parking. I mean, it's not as if they have to park all over the place and find some place and whatever. I mean, for example, Fenway Park has no parking lot. There's no parking lot for Fenway Park. And you have to do your best to park in garages, gas stations, things like that. Dodger Stadium is great parking all around the park. So in terms of, like, once you get there, but it's just the way they are. I mean, I don't live there, so I can't speak to how they are.
It's like everybody's got a party to go to afterwards.
Well,
maybe that's the case. I don't know.
As time goes, I care less and less about stuff like that. And you know what I mean? It's just like, to me, it gets down to the game. I mean, fan behavior, I don't care if the Dodger fans leave early, but I do care that the Blue Jay fans rain beer down and hit a baby.
Oh, I totally agree with you there.
Now that I do care about. I'm not big on the ignorant part of it. Now, you want to leave early, that's your business. I don't really care. But in terms of throwing stuff, you know, you throw stuff, right? For one thing, look at who you are. None of you have an arm, all right? So it's not going to reach the field anyway. And, you know, you're throwing stuff down on your fellow fans. Oh, that's just really brilliant. Really, really brilliant. I found that to be absolutely embarrassing and disgusting in watching that. Then the baby gets hit. Come on. If that doesn't encapsulize why it's wrong, nothing does.
Yeah, I understand you're frustrated the situation, but again, throwing stuff on the field, what purpose does that do other than delay the game more than it already was?
Right. Nassib Johnson joined Zettel on Bednarik list. That's nice. Okay, we covered that one.
That's done.
I mean, it's a nice information piece and so forth, but you're at the midway. I mean, I'm glad they're being recognized.
They're being recognized,
and
that's it, right.
And considered. After that, that's the other part. Awards. I vote on awards, obviously. I vote on the Wooden Award. I've voted on the Wooden Award for over 30 years now. I vote for the all Big Ten football teams. I just voted for the preseason basketball team last week, which was announced, I think, yesterday. We announced it yesterday, right? I think so. And, you know, so I vote on that. I have a vote for the All Big Ten football postseason, which is coming up. Then I'll do one for basketball as well. I like voting on the stuff. That's fine. which means I have to pick players of the year, and I have to, which then goes into the group with what everybody else's opinion happens to be on the player of the year too. But at least I get to express my opinion on it. And I remember one time talking about college basketball of the year, player of the year with my brother-in-law, and he wanted somebody from UConn, and I was like, nah, you know, can't remember which player I was talking about that I was going to vote for. And I'm going to vote this, that, he goes, and he finally says, well, what makes your opinion more important than mine? I said, well, I have a vote.
I have a vote. That's why.
Okay. So really, I mean, you're talking to the wall. I mean, so sorry. But people winning awards, I have less of like same thing with the, 15, 20 years ago, like who won the Heisman or whatever. Oh, yeah, let's see what's going to. I'll watch it, but I think everything's less to me now. It's more about who the winning and the losing of games that means exponentially more to me than anything else. Who wins, who loses on a game-by-game basis. That means a lot to me. Individual awards, who's recognized for what. I like voting for it. I do put a lot of research into my vote because I want to make sure that the proper people, in my personal opinion, are recognized. So I do put something into it. But, for example, I think it's great that AJ, Nassib, and Zelf, that's great for them personally. They all three deserve recognition for being the great defensive players they are. This does that. After this, it becomes a real crapshoot as to who wins. I mean, who won the Grozo Award last year as the nation's top kicker? That's where you jump in.
I some kicker.
Oh, well, that's good. It's Brad Craddock of Maryland. But I mean,
oh yeah, I would have guessed that. I don't know how I missed that.
Yeah. Right, but I'm saying you're typical of almost everybody out there.
Right. That proves your point right there, yeah.
Right, that you wouldn't know that. And nor do I do not absolutely, in a million years do I expect you to know that. I don't expect you to know that. And there isn't a single fact, I'm going to wager, unless you're a real Maryland fan, if you are a non-Maryland fan, you did not know that. If you're a Maryland fan, oh, yeah, absolutely. You definitely knew that your Aussie place kicker was the kicker of the year. He's back this year. I mean, the guy's a heck of a kicker. But my point is they announce all these awards now, the Thorpe Award, the Biletnikoff Award, the Bednarik Award, the Maxwell Award. The Maxwell at least goes back and has some history. The Outland does as well. But they announce all these awards, and really, unless your guy wins it, like from your team, do you care? What's really interesting in 24/7 sports to me, where you have ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, Fox Sports 1, Fox Over the Air, CBS, CBS Sportsnet, NBC, NBC Sportsnet, Big Ten Network, SEC Network, and all of this that we have, MLB Network, and so forth, okay? On and on and on. That we've actually become far more locked in on our teams and not the national scene. If I were to sit here and talk to Kevin about the Phillies, he could tell you chapter and verse about the Phillies. You know, pro and con, but he could tell you chapter and verse, what's going on in the system. I could talk to all of you Philly fans out there, and you could tell me about the guys in your system, guys that you like, how they played the second half and the whole thing. But if I were to talk to you about, before the playoffs began, about the Toronto Blue Jays, how many of you could have talked about the Toronto Blue Jays? It's not your team. It's not your league. In fact, I would guess that most Philly fans would say, yeah, Joe Carter at the home run off Mitch Williams. Yeah, I remember the Blue Jays. That's probably the extent of it. Yeah, they probably know because of trades that David Price is there. They probably know because of a trade Troy Tulowitzki's there. But you probably don't know much about Josh Donaldson. Probably don't know much about Encarnacion. Unless you're a Pirate fan, you don't know much about Russell Martin. That's how sports to me has changed in the last 15 years. I think more and more fans have become absolutely positively locked in on their team because guess what? With regional networks, the Phillies are on every single night. With regional networks, the Pirates are on every single night. Used to be with the baseball game of the week, your team was on once in a while and your team was on TV once in a while on a local TV package. So that Saturday game of the week was your baseball fix where you got a chance to see it. See somebody, and you had a wide range of teams. Yeah, the Dodgers are playing the Reds. Fernando Valenzuela is on the mound. And look over there, they got Johnny Bench, and they go, okay. And the World Series and the All-Star game were your pathway to seeing the best players in the game from different teams. Now, every Phillies game is on TV, so you don't have a desire to sit there and watch the Blue Jays play the Rangers in a regular season game because the Phillies are on tonight. Even if they're not playing well, you still want to watch them. Pirates having an unbelievable summer with 98 wins. Every Pirate game's on Root Sports, every single one of them. So you're sitting there and the Pirates are playing a three-game set with the Padres. Are you really mentally engaged and want to watch the Mariners play a series against the Red Sox? No. Thus, you don't know hardly anything about Seattle or the Red Sox. And I think fans had a wider knowledge of all the other teams besides their own because of that. Because there's no other way to get information unless you're reading up on it, watching the game of the week, whatever. But today, we're so locked in on our team that when we get to the playoffs, we're like, okay, so tell me a little bit about the Astros. I know they're in Houston. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Every 42 seconds, someone purchases an F-Series truck. Hurry to Sunbury Motors Trucktoberfest before someone gets your truck. Now is the best time to buy your next new Ford truck from SMC. Choose from over 100 F-150s with savings up to 10 grand. Sunbury Motors has close to 50 Super Duties with savings up to $11,500. What better way to impress your hunting camp than with a new Super Duty from SMC? Trucktoberfest means over 150 new F-150s and F-250s to choose from. Trucktoberfest means savings up to $11,500. Trucktoberfest means 0% financing for 60 months. Trucktoberfest means the best time to buy your next new Ford truck. And the only place to buy is Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. It's Sunbury Motors Trucktoberfest. So hurry in before someone gets your truck.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK tomorrow night, the Shamokin will take on Shikellamy. Dave Ritchie will call the game with Kevin Hurd. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve, how are you doing today?
Doing very well. How are you doing today?
Great. I'm not doing a soccer game. I'm actually sitting in a chair at home, so it's for the first time I'm not outside while we're talking.
Wow, you're in a comfort zone. That's impressive.
Yes, I am.
What worked last week that put them on track?
Listen, I thought they all around every aspect of their football game worked well. The offense with running the ball and passing, probably one of the best games that they've had. And defense did a great job of stopping what I thought was some terrific athletes. And the special teams, there wasn't any problems there. It just seemed like everything came together. Of course, having Sean Turber back really, really helps, because he reminds me a lot of any time he touches the ball, all right, things can happen. And he sure didn't let us down on Friday night.
The domino effect of him on both sides of the ball, how much better does he have as a football player, the ability to make other people around him better?
Just his speed and his athletic ability. I think that some people can make mistakes. For example, a lineman might not get a complete block or miss a block, and he's able to get around that miscue. And on defense, I think in the secondary, he comes up so well to make tackles if they get around the outside backer or through the line on his side. Plus, he's a great pass defender, and last week he played at one of the corners, and that did not play free safety. So he helped the team in that respect. That he took his expertise outside, and I think corner sometimes a little tougher to play than safety. So just his great athletic ability is and amazing. And you know what? This young man is only 16 years old, and he's a senior in high school. His parents, he started him early in school when they were in Puerto Rico, and he could play two more years if he would have been in our school system. But a pleasure to watch.
So what scares you two guys about what Shamokin can do?
Do you want to answer Kevin, or should I say Preston Burns?
Yeah, I was going to say there's really one answer, but yeah, you're right. Preston Burns is the one that scares me. He does so many good things with the football, and he is so tough to defend, Dave.
Well, he's got over 700 yards. I think he has 726 yards this season, and he's a really hard runner, but he's got that Turber speed also. Last week they started another quarter, Nate Shurrock, against Jersey Shore, and I think he had 155 yards passing, and he had a touchdown against Jersey Shore. So he stepped right in and did very well against what I think is a pretty solid team up at Jersey Shore. So their offense can put points on the board. As I think they scored 49 against Milton the week before. So if Chicklamy doesn't play the type of defense they played against Central Mountain, Shamokin would take full advantage of it. I know they would.
And this is a really tough team to scout in Shamokin because of the changes they've had at quarterback. There's three guys that's played quarterback this year for them, each one with their own special set of skills. And they've also changed defenses. They run about four different defenses, including a 5-2 they've run the last couple of weeks against Wing T teams. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what they decide to come out and do defensively as well.
But then again, if you execute your stuff, what does it matter what they run? All right, so you hate me, don't you, Kevin?
There are days.
I'll tell you something else that has tapped this team. Two of their better basketball players came out for football. The coach's son, Jake DiRanzo, and Isaiah Eprich, who were excellent guards on the basketball team, are playing wide receiver and also playing in the secondary. And it's added, again, that word athleticism to both of those positions.
Right. So, Kevin, the running back scares you?
Yeah. Running backs scare me. Running backs with 700 yards scare me.
No offense. I'm going to see Joey Bosa on Saturday night. Doesn't scare me at all.
You're not scared?
Won't run into him one time the entire night, man. won't see him. Won't personally see him within 3 feet of me all night.
Not scared. All right.
So not scared. All right, guys. 7 o'clock, the kick, 6:30, the airtime. The dynamic duel will be on the air. Look forward to another great broadcast.
Thanks, Steve. I'm sure you're looking forward to going out to the horseshoe, too. So,
it'll be fun.
I've never been there, and it's that in the big house. Either one of those two, I'd like to see put it on my list. So, I know you'll have a good time.
Yeah. everybody who enjoys college football, there are certain places that are must-go-to places. Tuscaloosa is, the Rose Bowl is, Michigan is, Ohio State is, Penn State is. Those are some of the must. Austin is, Notre Dame. Those are some of the must-go-to places in college football. So,
well, I've been to several of those, but I haven't been to the Horseshoe. So maybe one of these days. Yeah, I'll get there. So, yep.
Yeah, I hope you do. That'd be great. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, Milton back in action. Steve Williams joins us, and Steve, he'll be on 1380 Talk Radio WMLP. Steve, how tough a struggle is this becoming for Milton right now?
It's been very tough. They've allowed over 130 points in the last three games. They've got to find their defense again, and they've had some really tough time stopping some star quality runners in the last 2 weeks, and they're going to see another one this week against Jersey Shore with Levi Lorson. Lorson coming in with almost 1,100 yards. They're going to have to figure out a way to stop that guy.
Lorson scares me too, by the way, just for the record.
Oh, jeez. You're sitting up in the box. You're okay. Okay? The kid is not going to come get you, all right? Okay? All right. Now, ask for time and possession.
It is Halloween.
Oh, believe me, we've got two more weeks until that comes up, Steve. I get 365 of this, okay? Okay. Now, are teams in time of possession just imposing their will, and as the game goes, do you just feel like it slips?
Yeah, you know, last week against Montoursville, Montoursville scored on their opening drive, kicked off. Milton scored on their first play from scrimmage, but you just knew that Montoursville was going to control the ball. They controlled the ball. They controlled the clock. Milton eventually scored, but it was at the end of the game, so it was, you know, they refer to as, I guess, junk statistics because Montoursville had their second and third stringers in. But they've just, you know, struggled again against those big-time running backs, and it seems like there's an awful lot of them in this area this year.
What young players are playing better that opens the door down the road for Milton?
Well, they did get a lot of kids in last week. You know, as we look down through, Mason Fisher is a freshman. He was playing quite a bit last week, as was Nick Summers. They have a running back, and his name escapes me right now, but he's 6'3". But he's like 150 pounds. He's a string bean. And, you know, we've commented with that young man, you know, by the time he's a senior, you know, if he hits the weight room, he'll easily be 200 pounds because he's a, you know, pretty well-built kid. He's just a skinny freshman right now. They also have a freshman quarterback that ended up playing quite a bit last week. He played the end of the third quarter and all through the fourth quarter, just getting, you know, some snaps, getting some repetitions. Again, not a real big kid, not a strong kid. These guys need to hit the weight room, and they should be okay.
Well, it'll be on WMLP 1380. Steve, always an absolute pleasure. Always enjoy your broadcast.
Thank you very much, Steve.
All right, Steve Williams joining us. All right, Pat O'Brien, Sealands Grove is undefeated, but they've got a big showdown this week. Pat, it's great to have you with us.
Pat, welcome back to our Thursday discussion of high school football.
It's great to be back. I can't believe we're moving this far into the season. It's unbelievable, but we have a big one coming up tomorrow night, Kevin.
You absolutely do. It's for the Hack 1 lead. Of course, the win that Montoursville had a couple of weeks ago over Jersey Shore kind of made this game, well, not necessarily a title game, but it's definitely going to go a long way in determining the conference. Is that something the coaches have talked about this week with the Seals?
Absolutely. I mean, following the Berwick game, they knew they could turn their focus to this stretch, the Montoursville game, and the next week the Jersey Shore game. So they definitely have been talking about it. Any coach that I've talked to through Seals Grove, Dave Hess before, and now Derek, they have the same goals every year, and that's win the Hack 1 first and then move on to districts and then looking to get into state. So, yeah, it's definitely been talked about. Derek's relied on 21 seniors, though, you know, and it's the focus of those guys and the maturity of practice leading up to games like this that leaves him feeling, Derek Hicks, that is, very confident about his squad and their preparation for Montoursville this week.
Well, I know that everybody on the defensive side at Selins Grove probably has Keith Butkowski, the running back for Montoursville, on the radar. I mean, this kid carries the ball a ton. I mean, we're talking 30 times a game on average, and he does it very successfully. Is this a team you can afford to defensively sell out on the run against?
I think so. You know, with the 3-5 defense, you do put the corners on an island each and every week, so I think that will continue to be the same. So those five linebackers will sell out with, you know, trying to stop their running game with Butkowski, as you mentioned. I mean, 135 carries, over 1,000 yards already. It'll be the similar approach they had last year. He came in last year to this game with a lot of big numbers as well. Well, they ended up shutting him down, where he only had 39 yards on 18 carries. So I think the approach would be very much the same, and maybe force Mussina to have to throw a little bit and see what he can do. But the Selins Grove defense secondary has been very good as well. So, yes, to answer your question, I think you do sell out and then see how Mussina can do it through the air.
You talked about this team being senior-dominated for Selins Grove. Where have you seen some of the younger players step up, and how have you seen the senior leadership help them out in this nice run that they've had this year?
Well, and that's a great question, because they've had two games that adversity had been the issue. You know, you had the Mount Carmel game. It's a come-from-behind victory where you had your sophomore quarterback, Logan Livey, you know, telling us during the post-game interview that it was about the seniors looking them in the face and telling them, we got this. Let's go. Let's get this taken care of. And he ends up hitting his senior receiver, Colin Hoke, to tie the game, and then went to a fellow sophomore, Tony Dressler, to win the game, and then had to do the same thing against the Berwick Bulldogs. And it was Colin Hoke again who had a big game, and Logan Livey will tell you the same thing, that the seniors wander around that sideline looking at everybody, telling them, we got this. And to hear that from your sophomore quarterback, you know, says a lot about what the leadership looks like coming from those seniors. And now the development of those sophomores who are now becoming seasoned, you're seeing the effects of the maturity of those 21 seniors.
You see Coach Derek Hicks every week. This is his first year as a head coach at Selins Grove. He's been with the program before, but what have you seen with him in growing as a coach and getting into that head coaching role? What is it that you've seen different in him this year as past years?
Well, the first thing that you have to mention is the coaching staff he's brought in, you know, with the Derek Pope, the offensive coordinator, and also some senior-type coaching members as well. When you're talking about a Jim Hyo and Bill Moore, these are guys that have been around the program a long time. And then the mixture of guys from the previous coaching staff with the Pete Voss and Bastion as well. But you're talking younger, energetic guys. When you talk about Mike Ritter and I already talked about Derek Pope and Justin Stover as well. I mean, these guys he brought in to be a part of this, along with his brother Seth Hicks as well. That was the first thing I saw, was a very big difference about who he brought in. But you know, Derek's gone about it. He recognized that his passion and his focus is the defense, and he had said he needs to bring someone in that he can give the reins of the offense over to and feel good about that. So the biggest thing he did and was able to do is bring in Derek Pope on the offensive side. And to answer your question, he hasn't messed with that. He recognizes that, realizes that, and that's shown a lot to me, and I'm sure to the coaching staff, that he's sticking to his guns and allowing his coaching staff to coach. It's trickled into the players, and he's stayed with that week in and week out. He's done a great job with that as the season's going along.
That'll be tomorrow night at Montoursville's Warrior Stadium. Pat O'Brien, Ryan Brandt, pregame getting underway at 6 on Eagle 107 and Eagle107.com. And, of course, game time at 7. Pat, thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it, Kevin. Thank you, as always.
Thank you, Pat. Matt Cotrillo joins us for Lewisburg. Kevin asked 8 questions, so we're really out of time.
Yeah, I wasn't sure all of my time was going to be. Thought maybe a quick 30 second, and that's about it. But but hey, Selins Grove's doing well,
After question 5, we're going, okay. All right, so Matt, for Lewisburg, what are some of the keys coming up this week?
Well, they got to be ready to play, Steve. And in the first half, you know, it was that phrase, it wasn't pretty, but it'll do. That was the first half for Lewisburg, as they found themselves down 23-21, turned the ball over 3 times, gave up a lot of big plays, had special teams issues against a team in Central Columbia who they're clearly better than. And that was just the one thing. They just didn't show up to play in that first half. But second half, third quarter especially, they took control of the game and steamrolled in the second half and were able to pull away late in the game. So because this Danville team at 3-3, still trying to stay in the thick of things for the playoff picture, and they're going to be ready to play this game. They have a lot of momentum after an impressive 42-15 win against the Wyalusing. And this is a team that forces 17 turnovers defensively. So being ready to play, number one, taking care of the football, and run D again, facing Trent Hilkert of Danville, is going to be the three keys to game to victory for Lewisburg.
Appreciate the time, Matt, very much.
My pleasure, Steve, as always.
All right, on the Valley 100.9, Lewisburg football, they take on Danville. Come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Lucky thing we cut the Matt Cotrillo interview short.
I'll make it up to Matt next week. I got excited. I got a chance to do an interview on the program. I just got carried away.
Here, I'll give you eight of them. Why don't you do all? Let's tell Paul Keels tomorrow. How about that? Why don't you interview him?
I love Paul. Nah, it would not be the kind of interview anybody would want to hear. Be kind of like a Chris Farley interview. I like listen to you, and you're like awesome.
Right now, if I can impale myself on a sword, it might be a better option.